Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Combox Live, where the game lives on, it never dies. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango on Twitter. And with me is my good mate, Rob Barron. You can find him on Twitter as well, at Monsieur Judge. And we are here to review the Oval Test, in which New Zealand leveled the three-match series 1-1 by spanking England by a whopping 253 runs. Rob, I see that you've got your sunglasses on because of your hay fever. How do you feel?
Hey, I've got my sunglasses on because I've been weeping since the test match finished about whatever it was, 7 hours ago. Well, they lost this game for, I would say, like, if I was to summarise it in 30 seconds, which I won't, I'll summarise it in an hour, but if I had to summarise it in 30 seconds, I would say England picked a really bad test match team and all of that was their own doing. Then they dropped loads and loads of catches. And they just didn't play like a proper test match cricket team at any point during the game and got deservedly stuffed by a team that on paper was better. But bear in mind, New Zealand lost Kane Williamson, which is like taking root out for England, isn't it?
Yeah.
And they just put in a pretty experienced guy. I heard Michael Vaughan bagging off Henry Nicholls earlier and it was like, he's not as good as Bethel and he's not as, like, he's played 60 test matches, hasn't he? And he's played a World Cup final and he's, you know, he's played 150 odd times for his country. So he's a good person to come in and replace, you know, you've got some class and experience there. And England are just chucking in, you know, whoever happens to be available and let's let this guy have a day off and these two abandon, we don't know why, and all this sort of nonsense. So it's full nonsense to start with. England won the toss, chuck that advantage away, just completely stupid all the way through as usual. But honestly, Behram, that team was no good, the team that they picked.
Yeah.
And it's their own fault that they picked them.
True. And I mean, if you look at the team, of course, we have just known, like, I mean, it's just been released the news that Ben Stokes and Gus Atkinson are available for selection for the third test match. That has happened. So we'll get Rob's thoughts on that a bit later. First, we've got a test match to review. In the second test at the Oval, Ben Stokes and Gus Atkinson were not available and we saw two debutants replace them in Jordan Cox. And then we had Sonny Baker, out-and-out Baz ball pick. He was also making his debut, as was James Roo, who had to fill in for Jamie Smith. Smith, of course, had to take some time off for the birth of his child and congratulations to him. And Bash, unfortunately, also kind of got the axe. Really unfortunate for him. He might have even been useful on this surface a bit. But yeah, Bash was replaced by Matthew Fisher, who only has played a solitary test match. And I was noting this down before the start of the test, Rob, that in England's playing 11, only Joe Root, Ben Duckett and Harry Brook have played more than 22 test matches. And Joe Root has played more tests than any of the other 10. He scored more runs of the other 10 combined. And he's got more wickets as well.
Yeah. And this is because the management, as we've now had, if anyone needed it confirming, we didn't, but if anyone needed it confirming, they confirmed it publicly with the words that they said after the game today. They haven't got a clue. Right, they haven't got a clue how to put a cricket team that has a good chance of winning on the field. Now, England at home against New Zealand should be decent favourites and they should win more than they lose against New Zealand. I think that is fair to say. Mm. And remarkably, despite the team news, England were favourites to win this cricket match and they certainly didn't look like it at any point. The team that they got on the park, right, you said Jamie Smith is, you know, his son was born or his kid was born. I'm not sure if it's son or daughter. His kid was born. Great news. A day or two before the start of the test.
Yep.
I understand. I'm not happy that it's 2026, but I understand it's 2026. And therefore, professional athletes who get paid loads of money to play for their country can have a week off to help their wife with all the crying and stuff that's happened in the first week, right? Fine. I'm not gonna spend 10 minutes dissecting that one. But he is somebody, Jamie Smith, who got pelters slightly unfairly, I thought, for his Ashes performance, showed some promise in the first test for his career advancement. Doesn't really want to be missing that test match, does he? Doesn't really want to miss it, but he does. If I was him, I'd have played it. We then have Roo playing, right? There's so many things to pick from this test match to pick apart about, you know, why New Zealand won. But James Roo, who I think, from what I've seen in the county game and him batting in Red Bull stuff, looks very, very promising. Mm-hmm. I think him and his brother will probably play quite a lot of test matches for England.
I do believe that his brother is a bit more talented. Thomas Roux, of course. But James Roux has a pretty decent first-class record. I'm not sure if he's used to, you know, batting that low down the order or whether he's kept wicket regularly or not. You can tell me those things. But I did see that, or I noted down that he was a bit vulnerable versus the short stuff. He really wanted to get out to the bumpers. Let's just put it that way.
So I was very disappointed with him. You should never write someone off or give someone loads of crap for one test match performance, because it's really, really hard test match cricket. But his wicket keeping, if you pair him against Blundell, right, it was night and day. And Blundell, or Blundell, however you want to pronounce it, Blundell was one of the main reasons New Zealand was so threatening constantly, because he was able to stand up to the stumps against 85 mile an hour bowling. Mm-hmm. And that is a skill in itself, and it should not be discounted. That is a big, big thing for New Zealand to be able to do. They did practice it in previous tests. They did know it was a good way to keep Brooke particularly and a bit Root quiet, and make sure that they couldn't have liberties, because Brooke loves wandering down the track. And for someone to be that effective behind the stumps, it's one thing him being there, but then you have to be able to pull it off. And then you watch Roux, who is standing at least a yard further back than he should have been, because there was one that he grasped that he wasn't standing in the right place because he didn't manage to get down in time. He was a big negative behind the stumps.
Yes.
And when England, in the first innings, when England had conceded about 300, 50 of those were bloody extras.
Well,
right?
you're being generous over here, because there were 53 extras out of a total of 391 in the first inning. So England were giving extras for fun. I think most of those were byes, if I can remember this correctly.
Yeah, it was some of those byes could have been called wides, to be fair. But he looked bad behind the stumps, and he didn't look like he was going to stop anything that was difficult. He didn't look like he was going to catch anything that was difficult. And at one point, I think when England got to 300, it was the highest percentage of byes ever from England in the first 300 runs in the last 92 years. And the guy before, the wicketkeeper got injured, and a 47-year-old had a go. Right, and so that's, to put it into perspective, it's near enough all time worst number of byes conceded. That's not all his fault, but when you have the other wicketkeeper standing up to the stumps against a lot of bowling that was just as quick as anything England were throwing down and doing really, really well. He was causing LBWs, which he did in the first test match. He was behind some of the LBWs. Bear in mind, Henry was able to get Root and Brooke out in both innings.
Yeah.
You know, no one's ever done that before. And Root to be LBW in both of them to Henry with the keeper up, it's a huge deal that they had someone that's able to do that. And England didn't, right? And I'm not saying Jamie Smith definitely would have done it. And I understand that playing at one level and then leaping to test matches is a huge deal. So we shouldn't be too harsh on Root. But his selection is part of the reason why England didn't win this test match. And I think that's a fair comment to come out with.
Yeah. I mean, look, there were obviously a lot of flaws in England's selection. I thought the lack of experience when it comes to their bowling attack was another big one. Also, they did not have a frontline spinner, even though Bethell and Root ended up bowling a lot. But still, overrate was another concern, and they have been docked 12 points. All the points that they had won at Lords are now gone because of overrate. So that's another concern. And I actually want to talk to you about Joe Root, because when we discussed Stokes and how, you know, he has, you know, cross the line one times too many, and there is a bit of a discipline issue over there, which clearly he's not, you know, learning from. You were also of the opinion that Joe Root should be made interim captain. And I was like, I kind of agree, because there's no other option. You're not spoiled for choice. Well, with the bat, Joe Root does all right in this test match. 46 runs in his first dig and a pretty gutsy 77 in his second dig. He has also become the only cricketer in history to score over 14,000 test runs. He couldn't save England from a 253 run defeat. But with the bat, I thought, okay, that's not a failure of a test match. As captain, okay, fine. Maybe the team is selected by Baz as well. It's not just Root, whatever. But first, winning the toss and electing to field first. Now, I don't know. Perhaps Root thought that the second innings is going to be the best time to bat, right? The second innings out of four, bear in mind. So day two, day three, essentially, which England didn't make use of. That's the only thing I can think of. Or maybe because Baz bowlers like to chase. But anyway, he opts to field first. And then it's just really poor management of the bowlers. I remember Joff was on for a six-over spell bowling bumpers. He couldn't even take the new ball later. This is a bit of a pattern with Joe Root. He has never known how to use Joffre Archer, has he?
Right. Okay, so we'll go to this. Root's captaincy is very bad, yeah. And it was over a large sample size, and he inherited the captaincy from somebody who was also very bad because they were negative, and they spent most of their captaincy trying not to lose and playing by the book and all that nonsense that I've hated from England for many, many years. And honestly, I loved Stokes' captaincy. I said it at the time, I've continued to say it, because at least he tried to win, right? And like I said before, we didn't get many of the decisions right in terms of declarations and all that stuff, but at least the onus of the team was on winning and trying to push games forward, which is great. So we know Root isn't a particularly good captain, but the reason I said it at the end of the last test match, he has to captain, is because there was no one else to do it. And at least he's got experience. I mean, they needed some sort of sanity, you know, in the entire setup, because there certainly isn't any from the management, you know, the ND and the coach and everything else. They're all, you know, complete idiots. And so when they're picking a team, Bashir not playing, you know, playing in the last one and not bowling, and then not playing in this one when they bowled over spin, it shows that they have no idea what they're doing.
Also,
I don't mind the toss decision, right? That's okay.
Sorry to cut bowling you off. Versus fine here. But if you look at the third and fourth innings, it's not like there's nothing in it for spinners. The ball was starting to take some turn, and the Oval was known as one of those grounds where spinners can actually, you know, come to the party. So dropping Bash for this one and selecting him for the Lord's Test, it's a bit bonkers.
Well, look at this. So first of all, toss decision, fine, because often, if you get anything out of the Oval, it's early and then it flattens out and plays better. So that's okay. Yeah. Ball first, no problem. But picking Sonny Baker, right? And I understand that Sonny Baker is a good lad by all accounts. And it's great to see his enthusiasm. I loved his batting in the first innings when he stuck around and showed some proper heart. Right? That's all good.
I love his run-up. I think it's very animated. He takes one deep breath, then he kind of flutters like a chicken and then he starts running.
No. His run-up, Bayram, that was a good description. I thought Jared's description of it was very good as well.
What was his description?
His run-up is of somebody that doesn't know how to bowl in test match cricket, right? Which he isn't, because he hasn't played very much first-class cricket. He hasn't had much success in it. They picked him for the ODIs, and I was like, I don't understand why you've picked this man for the ODIs, because he doesn't really play that format, that his numbers are rubbish. And they're like, yeah, but he's really, really quick, so he'll be fine. And he played an ODI and he bowled 42 balls and he got hit for 76 runs at 11 and over, and he didn't take any wickets. And then in the T20s, he bowled four overs and he went for 52 runs and he didn't take any wickets. So looking at his first class numbers, where he averages 30 and goes at four and over, and he's only played 14 matches. So that isn't someone that should be playing test cricket, right? Based on his performances. And what he definitely shouldn't be is playing his first test when everyone else is playing their first test, or loads of other people are playing their first or second or third, and it's a complete change of everybody. You don't put him in that one. You put him in when the other 10 are settled and you can afford to gamble on another bowler, right? So England messed it up because they picked him, and every time he bowled, New Zealand breathed a sigh of relief and they scored some easy runs at four and over plus. And he never looked threatening. The wickets he did get were kind of charity wickets. He was going at nearly five and over. He shouldn't have been in the team, right? Pure and simple. So they picked a team that was way less likely to win than one they could have picked, and that's their own fault. It's the fact that they couldn't pick Robinson is because they've not managed him very well throughout his career.
Also,
he played one test match, he got man of the match, and he wasn't fit to play the next one.
Exactly. So how is that on them then? It's on Ollie Robinson for not being fit enough for test cricket.
The reason why Ollie Robinson hasn't played in the last 3 years, a lot of it is down to Ollie Robinson, right?
Yeah.
He's by all accounts, he's a difficult man. He's made some very poor life decisions, which are well documented. Don't need to go into that now. And he has struggled to keep himself fit, and he's turned up to games and bowled at bloody 70 miles an hour. And you think, what the hell is this guy up to? Strong management identify how much talent the man has and work with him and get him to a level where he can play test matches for England. Because presumably, if your job is cricket player, you want to play test match cricket for England, right? So they haven't managed to get him to that level. And when they did get him to that level, you're like, bloody hell, this guy wants it now. I listened to his interviews. He wants it, right? He's back. He wants to play for England. He wants to give everything. But his body's not up to it. So he plays one test. He can't play again. He'll probably play in the next one. Okay, so that's him. Fisher, I thought, looks like a guy who should probably be kind of your fourth bowler in a test match. I think he's fine. He's not going to be blowing teams away. He's 28. He knows his game. His average in first class is about 30 or 29 or something. He looked completely fine to me. And I thought his Bowling dry was really, really good in the first innings. You know, his first spell or two was really, really good.
I think that he was someone who you can bring the keeper up to, and then you can't expect like, you know, rock and roll sort of cricket from Matt Fisher. He's just going to land it in a channel. And I thought he was pretty disciplined for the most part, not particularly threatening or incisive, even though he ended up having a decent test match, right? With the bat, he really impressed. An unbeaten 50 of 77, which is why England were only trailing by 100 runs. It would have been more had it not been for Matt Fisher's unbeaten 50. And then, you know, 2 for 62 and 3 for 58, which comes out to 5 for 120 in 40.2 overs. So that's pretty good, man. Less than 3 runs an over, and you're taking 5 wickets in 40 overs. That's all right.
So the thing is, if you've got an attack which is gun bowler, wicket-taking bowler, another good bowler, and your other pacer can do the Fisher job, which is when the other ones are resting, Archer, Tong, he can just keep it to less than 3 and over and be a slight threat and bowl it on the right spot over and over again. That's great. But when the other bowler is Sonny Baker and they don't have a spinner, it becomes crap. And that's what England decided to do. So let's go back to Root's captaincy. And you were bang on with what you said. So what happened was it got to the bit where Phillips was threatening to get away because he was playing really, really well. And they decided that the plan was, bearing in mind that Jofra Archer, I've said it, I'll say it again, shall I, for the people in the back that might not have heard. 7 years ago, right, Root bowled. They knew that Jofra Archer had a bad elbow, and they knew that Jofra Archer could be the key to England's success for a decade. They knew that when they had him, right? They'd seen him at school. Those of us that saw the Hobart Hurricanes Jofra Archer won't forget what we saw. They could have had an all-time great across the formats if they managed him properly. So over two test matches against New Zealand 7 years ago, he bowled 70 overs across two innings. One of those, England lost by an innings. The other one, England drew, and he's now managed to play an average of two tests a year since then, 14 tests in 7 years, right? So that was because they mismanaged Jofra Archer.
Sorry, I have a question.
Too much when he was injured.
I have a question. You said 70 overs across two test matches or two innings?
Two innings.
That's 40 mad.
Overs. 40 overs in a game that England lost by an innings, and the next innings he bowled about 30. So it was definitely 70 across the two innings.
Damn.
And so, England's result from those two tests was one draw and one massive loss.
Just for the record, I mean, you can say that Root probably thought that I'll divide that number by two, because at the Oval, Jofra Archer ends up bowling 36 overs across two innings, and 2 for 61 followed by 3 for 63, you'd think aren't really poor figures, but there was a moment in between where all Jofra was doing was, you know, bowling long spells and bowling bumpers.
Yeah, it's mad.
I don't think you should just have that as your ploy. Jofra Archer could very easily get the outside edge as well. You know, target the stumps.
The point is, he's 31 now. He's only playing. He hasn't played 20 test matches yet, this 31-year-old gun that they've known how good he is since he was at school, because they got him from a different country to play for England when he was at school. They know how good he is. And so what they did is they were like, well, Phillips might get away from us here. Joff, we want you to bowl at his face for an hour, right? And he bowled 8 overs on the reel at the end of the day, when he was already tired and he hasn't played first-class cricket for 6 months, right? And they gave him time off, I assume, to try and manage him. He had a bit of a holiday after the IPL had finished, where he bowls 4 overs a game, and then he has 3 days off, sometimes a week, and then he plays again and bowls 4 overs again, right? He bowled 8 overs in a row when he was tired at the end of the day. Didn't make the breakthrough because Phillips played him really well.
Yes.
He was getting bombed, and Phillips played a great innings, right? The brilliant 100 that was. And he just kept throwing himself on the floor and getting out of the way. It was like watching Robin Smith all those years ago. It was exactly like that. He wore a couple, he got out of the way of the rest. It was very, very good. And he was wearing sunglasses when he did it. Cool people wear sunglasses. We know this now. Really, really cool, right? Then the next morning, for England to have a chance, they are, what, 7 down? New Zealand are 291 for 7, right? Mm-hmm. At the end of the day.
Yep.
So what do you need? You need your good bowlers to bowl straight away and get them out. Also, there was a new ball just round the corner.
Yep.
And so we're like, right, let's have Joff getting them out here. Jofra is nowhere to be seen because he's too tired from the night before.
Yes.
Right? They don't communicate any of this to anybody, obviously, but he's too tired from the night before. So the biggest threat, when you have to start again, ask Joe Root today, who had to start again. When you have to start again, it's really, really difficult. What you don't want to face is Jofra Archer. What you do want to face is Bethel. So England gave, they decided that they were going to go bouncer, and they would definitely get rid of Kyle Jameson, no problem. They'd definitely get rid of Phillip Soon by bowling complete nonsense at him. And then the first over was Baker, wasn't it? And it was like first ball was four byes. You're like, here we go again. Here's England again. Next ball, four. You're like, all right. So they're chucking runs away as much as they possibly can. And then Jameson, after a few overs of England getting whacked all over the place, and you're like, what the hell am I watching here? Mm. Hits one straight down Duckett's throat, doesn't he? And you're like, okay, well, you didn't deserve this wicket, but you got away with it. And then Duckett throws it on the floor. Mm. This is England. This is England.
This is truly England. And I mean, and I have a very, very long ledger when it comes to dropped catches, which is my favorite part of doing shows with you. But before that, because there's a lot more to discuss, before that, we shall be taking a short break. You guys are watching Combox Live with Rob and Behram. Go nowhere. We will be back very, very shortly.
I have traveled the cricketing world, and so I've collected two things: the phone numbers of random taxi drivers and overseas SIM cards. Rideshare apps have fixed the first part, and Sally is doing the second. Now, all you need is their eSIM on whatever plan works for you. You activate it and you can use it anywhere in the cricketing world. It helps you save money. It is a global solution to a global problem. Stop fiddling with tiny SIMs and get the one that does it all. Go to Sally.com Good Areas and use the code Good Areas to get an exclusive 15% off your first purchase. Fly free with Sally.
Welcome back to Combox Live. You guys are with Behram and Rob, and we are currently dissecting England's 253-run drubbing that they received at the hands of New Zealand in the Oval Test. All right, so you discussed how they selected the wrong team, England, right? And the tactics were not too impressive. And we obviously mentioned that in the first innings of this Test match, England bowled 53 extras, which is a record, I believe. And New Zealand only scored 391 runs. So that's a massive chunk of those runs, 53 extras. But then again, there are some other worrying signs, and that is mostly or has mostly to do with England's fielding. Maybe the Lord's Test was a false positive. Maybe most of the guys who made mistakes over here didn't play the Lord's Test or are seriously or very, very young in their careers. But let me go through them, if you will. All right.
Sure.
Darrell Mitchell dropped on two by Jordan Cox, who is a cash dropping machine. We saw that in the IPL. So that was the first drop. Darrell Mitchell on two by Jordan Cox. Darrell Mitchell scores 44 runs. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Tom Blundell, he was dropped on 34 by Rue behind the stumps. This is the one that he grasped, like basically used the floor for assistance. And dropped on 34, Blundell scores 51 runs. Now, next up is Kyle Jameson, which you just mentioned. He was dropped on 15 by Ben Duckett, and he even ends up scoring 41 runs, right? So, as you can see, these runs are accumulating, and that was it for the first innings. Now, if you count those runs, that's 42 for Darrell Mitchell, 42 extra runs, 17 extra runs for Tom Blundell, so that comes out to 59, and then Duckett drops Jameson on 15, he scores 41, so that comes out to 26. So that means that 85 runs England just gifted to New Zealand just via their dropped catches. And New Zealand scored 391, securing a 100-run lead eventually.
Right. So they've chucked away 85 just on the face of it. But you must add on, 15% for extras, right? So let's say nearly 100 they've thrown away.
More. Also, more than 100.
Also,
53 plus Jopra, 85. 53 plus 85 is a lot, man. 138 runs. They would have been in the lead.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I meant you had some more, including that, you know, those runs that they let go by, plus extras, plus all the ones they conceded anyway. Anyway, also, they're seven down, and they let them score another 100 because Jofra doesn't bowl.
Yeah.
And when Jofra came into the attack, an hour and 50 minutes after he was watching everybody else get smacked, and they were like, we're not going to bowl Jofra now because we want him to rest and be good in the second innings. And then it got to 1 hour, 50 minutes of them still batting, and England being made to look really, really silly, and they had to throw in the ball, and the innings was all out 5 minutes later. It was a complete fiasco. So that's 100 runs that they conceded of the morning without Jofra bowling.
Yeah.
Then we go over, and bear in mind, right, in that first innings, let's not forget, I think it's reasonable to say at least 8 and probably 9 of the Kiwis got themselves out in that first inning.
True.
It wasn't great bowling, was it?
It wasn't the bowling that got those wickets. It wasn't the surface that got those wickets either. It was just really, really soft. Soft dismissals all around.
Who got the most wickets
by New Zealand in that first innings? And this is great, right? The leading wicket taker for England was Jacob Bethell. Best bowler in the first innings. 3 for 26. 3 for 26 in 10 overs. Jacob Bethell might never have a better spell. And it was mostly New Zealand just throwing away their wickets. Because they probably, you know, that was the theme in that first innings, that New Zealand could have gotten even more than 391 runs. And the second innings might be the best time to bat. Of course, England disproved that notion. But at that point, you're feeling that England have really let themselves down by the extras, by the drop catches in the first innings, by some of the selection and captaincy decisions as well, like over bowling Jofra. But it gets better. In the third innings, when New Zealand are back to bat, Rachin Ravindra, and at this point, New Zealand are 2 wickets down for not too many, right? Rachin Ravindra is batting on 7, and Roo drops a straightforward chance behind the stumps. Rachin is dropped once again on 67 by Emilio Gay. Rachin ends up scoring 76 of 99. Okay. Henry Nichols, Centurion, he was dropped on 42 by Roo. It was down the leg side, not a very straightforward chance. But I think you said XC85. XC is Rob's metric about expected catches. So out of 100 catches, how many can you take? But anyway, so Nichols is dropped on 42 by Roo behind the stumps on down the leg side. And then on 65 by Emilio Gates. It's Roo and Gay who are doing most of the dropping in that second innings for New Zealand. And 121 runs is what Henry Nichols ends up with. Daryl Mitchell then dropped on 32.
Let me just stop you there for 1 second. England lost the test match by 253 runs.
Yes.
Just the drops you've said so far is 233,
yeah.
Right?
And I have more.
Keep going.
Yeah,
what are we on to now?
I have more. We've got Daryl Mitchell, who was dropped twice in the same test, this time by Harry Brooke in the slip cordon. It was early on the morning of day 4. I think you probably missed this one. But yeah, 32 is what Dazza was dropped on. He ends up scoring 68 runs. So Daryl Mitchell scores 44 and 68 in this test match. He could have gone for 2 and 32. And then there's that Jofra catch towards the end where Nathan Smith is dropped on 36. He doesn't add too many. So that's the only drop catch that doesn't cost England. But you add the tally of all these runs that England could have saved via just catching the ball and then perhaps bowled fewer extras, maybe like 23 instead of 53. Bam! They've won the test match.
They've won really easy. Just from what you've said there, Bayram, that they put more runs on the floor than they lost by.
Yeah.
And in the first test match, it was the other way around. New Zealand did it, and New Zealand would have won if they'd have taken their catches, or you could, having seen what we saw today, if Matt Henry was fit for the whole game.
Yeah.
But so as I'll stop saying it when it stops happening, if you take your catches, you are way more likely to win the test match. And any cricket match, you are way more likely to win. And had England caught well, even though they've picked all the wrong team, even though they made loads of mistakes with the bat and misrun outs and comedy fielding positions and couldn't bowl their good bowlers because they're tired or they're not allowed to play or whatever, they still could have won this game were they able to catch the fundamental easy skill that they should all be able to do.
Yeah.
And one of the people that can't catch had a massive pair of gloves on. Why not, Bayram, why not let Cox have a go at keeping for a bit if Roo's really struggling?
I suppose.
Because he couldn't cope with the test match, could he?
No.
With the gloves. And they had another guy who all he did in the whole of the IPL, Jordan Cox, we're told, and I have seen him be a good fielder, but we're told Jordan Cox is an amazing fielder, one of the best fielders in England. He came on to subfield 3 times in the IPL and he dropped 3 catches.
Yep.
Right? That's all he did. That's all he did in the IPL. So then he comes here and he starts dropping catches and fielding badly as well. Just give him the gloves for a bit and go, look, James, like you're probably not standing in the right place here.
Yeah.
We're leaking loads of buys. Just have a chill out over there for a bit and we're going to let Jordan have the gloves for a couple of hours and just see how we get on. Why not?
Yeah.
Why not do that?
I agree. Also, I mean, look, you are coming into this test with such an inexperienced side. I know that, you know, there will be mistakes, but I can't even remember the amount of drop catches I've counted over here. And no disrespect to Sarah Taylor, of course, good things take time. And I'm sure that she'll figure this out and she'll solve England's butterfinger problem. But I remember when Bethell takes that catch on day one, it was a splendid catch. I think he was at gully, right? I tweeted, I was like, we are now over a test into this series and England have only dropped 1 catch and clearly Sarah Taylor is working wonders. And then they go on to drop like 8 or 9. It's not even a small number. It's a proper role reversal with New Zealand from the first test match. And New Zealand, by the way, only shell 1 catch that I was able to spot in this entire test. And no surprises who that was. It was Rachin Ravindra. He dropped Thomas Roo on 23. He didn't end up scoring any more runs anyway. I think just 1 run where Like I said, he had decided that I'm going to go out to the short ball. But Rachan may have dropped three in this series. New Zealand dropped one in this test match. And England's drops plus extras plus bad decisions cost them about 300 runs? Or is that too lenient an estimate?
Yeah, and the thing is, when you break it down like that, it's an enormous number. It's like they only play two innings and they're basically giving one of the innings away because they can't do stuff that they absolutely should be able to do. And a part of that is the bowler looks behind the stumps and he sees a keeper he's never seen before, slip fielders that are standing in different positions. The gullies doesn't usually field there. And they're like, what do we do with... This is what goes back to what I was saying earlier. If you're going to pick Baker, which they shouldn't have done, and it was shown, you know, from his bowling that he's not ready to play test cricket, he shouldn't be one of many new faces because you can't put them all somewhere else, right? Yeah. You can't go, oh, well, we want to have a solid slip cordon or we want to have a good ring field or whatever it is. You can't do it if you've changed half the team from last time. Like, when are we going to get onto why the two people or the three people that did all the damage in the first test match weren't allowed to play for various reasons? Or four of them, like Jamie Smith played really well in the first test.
Yeah, I mean, look... I think that obviously they'll reflect, and maybe when Stokes and Atkinson are back, which from the reports that we're hearing will be in the next test, then they'll have less of these issues, especially, you know, when it comes to playing a frontline spinner. I think England can only brave up to do that when they've got Stokes in the team, because they look at him as their fourth seamer. Without him, they're like, oh, we can't even go there.
Yeah, so the reasons why they weren't allowed to play initially was like they've been really, really bad and they've broken this curfew and all this and they shouldn't have been in a fight with the rugby team. And we spoke about it for an hour, right? So I don't need to go into all that now.
Yeah.
But for McCullum to come out today and say, right, the cricket regulator, God knows how much those people get paid, the cricket regulator, who has taken over a week to dissect all the information.
To regulate.
Has found...
They're regulators.
Yeah, I mean... great song, by the way. They have spent a whole week coming up with nothing, right? We have learned zero more information. I was like, surely someone will have filmed something and that will go round and the Sun will buy it off somebody or it'll end up on the internet. None of that. So they basically said they didn't really do anything. Then they came out and said, well, this is Brendan McCullum himself said today, well, actually, it could be argued that Atkinson didn't really know that there was a curfew because he wasn't actually around when we told everyone there was a curfew. I knew there was, and you knew there was, but the England cricket team didn't know. And Stokes' argument was, I knew there was a curfew, but I didn't think it applied the day we won. I thought we're allowed to go out and get as pissed as we want and punch as many people as we like in a nightclub. So what the hell are you talking about? So he didn't know the rules, right? The captain doesn't know the rules that he himself is meant to enforce. That was his argument. And the management went, yeah, that's fair enough, because basically Stokes said, if you're saying that I'm not going to be the captain anymore, I'm off. I'm taking my bat and my ball and I'm going home forever. And they've had crisis meetings behind the scenes. This is reading between the lines, but it's obviously true. They had crisis meetings behind the scenes and they went, all right, Ben, what we're going to do is we're going to come out and say, we've all made a mistake. We're going to give you a naughty boys letter, both of you. We're going to say, sorry, we didn't put the rules in properly. That's on us. We'll put the rules in properly next time. We'll call it a blip. We'll forget about it. We lost the test. That looks good on you. You scored 95 for Durham. Brilliant. And we'll see you next week. And we'll all be mates again. Let's go for a beer and talk about it. Right. So that's all done now. But what that did is it caused absolute pandemonium in the camp. Nobody believes a word that these men say anymore forever. And the thing that McCullum and Key, particularly, because they're the ones that have spoken publicly, are missing is that their very words make their own jobs untenable.
Yeah.
You cannot still have your job if you're saying the reason why we banned these people now doesn't really matter. And the reason why they didn't know the rules is because we didn't tell them properly.
It's not just them, by the way. I don't think the buck stops at Baz and Key. I think the two Richards of the ECB, they also have to take some of this accountability.
Well, yeah, Gould and they don't seem to put their head above the parapet or above water or have you, you know, where, however you want to analogize their heads. They don't put them anywhere where we can see them, right? So we don't know what they're saying. But all they've done is confuse, lie, outright lie. That's what they made Harry Brook do, or Harry Brook decided to do it himself. One of those two things happened. They've got into positions where they're like, well, we've only got one guy that can be captain, and he's the guy that we know isn't very good at captaining. So that's him. He's definitely got the job because there's no one else. And it's like, well, what do we do with Robinson? He can't play. He's injured. Okay, that's fine. What do we do with Jamie Smith, who's trying to resurrect his test career and keep going. Well, he can have a week off because he's just had a kid. Okay, cool. What do we do with these two? Well, they can't play. Why? Don't know. What are we going to tell everyone? We'll just keep saying words until they stop asking the question. Mm-hmm. Nobody stops asking the question. Then when the test match is finished, they're going to be asked the question again. And they go, well, actually, we're just going to put it down as a blip. We didn't tell them really. They didn't really know. They didn't do anything that bad anyway. Let's all forget about it. It's fine. The regulator, God, again, how much do those guys get paid? The regulators decided that there was no case to answer. Nothing happened. Mm-hmm. Everyone have a lovely Christmas. It's all fine. Great. Well done, everyone. So that's full nonsense from everybody. Full nonsense from the players. Full nonsense from the management. Full nonsense from the PR machine. We're as the £150 a day to go and watch, £175 a day to go and watch this crap.
Wow.
We're meant to, £175 a day at the Oval for some of the tickets and £9.30 for a pint, Bayram. £9.30.
Wow.
You can't even find a pub in Chelsea that charges you that much.
The naughtiest nightclub in Chelsea?
I don't think so. I don't think the naughtiest nightclub in Chelsea charges £9.30 for a pint. They'll probably be watching this.
Is it the White Horse? Discount. I reckon.
The White Horse in Parsons Green doesn't charge £9.30 for a pint, I don't think. I'm pretty confident. Mm. It's just a full and complete joke that we are the paying consumers of the cricket expected to shell out this amount of money to go and watch them when they're not getting anywhere near their best 11 on the park. Yeah. And they're then playing complete crap with the players that they do pick.
Yeah.
Shout out. It must be said, though, right, New Zealand played really, really well. We haven't mentioned Matt Henry yet.
We'll talk about them. I just wanted to wrap England up real quick because we spoke of Root. We mentioned Matt Fisher. You in particular spoke a lot about Sonny Baker. I'm actually a bit impressed by Emilio Gay. I know that he's been fortunate. There was an early run-out opportunity which he survived and then Duckett goes run out shortly after, which was kind of comical. But Emilio Gay scored consecutive 50s in Test cricket, his second and third innings, right? Making it 250s and three knocks and then eventually four. 53 in that first batting innings for England and he was top scorer. It was just Matt Fisher's unbeaten 50 of 77 to support him and they didn't even bat together. But I think Gay is someone who started off quite well over here. Got a really tough pitch at Lord's, scored a 50 over there as well and now won at the Oval. So there are some positive signs, I suppose.
So I've been really impressed with Gay since he's come in. He is very anti-Bazball, though, isn't he? Mm. You know, the mentality or the tactics appear to have changed quite a lot if he's opening the batting. I've been really impressed with him because that first test match he got, spoke about it at the time, it's about as tough as it gets facing those bowlers on a pitch that they came out and said was unsatisfactory. It was a nightmare lottery pitch. He did really well. And what he did in the first innings was he dug in and it wasn't all that easy.
Yeah.
It was late swing. It was doing a bit. It was late swing. And he batted for 114 balls, right? What's Crawley's average balls per test dismissal? It's 47.
Yeah.
Right? So he's already coming in and say, what I'm going to do, the best way for me to get some runs at test level is to occupy the crease for as long as I can. Hmm. I'm very disappointed that England didn't decide to do that in their second innings when they're chasing 50 more than the world record, right, against a good team. But his tactics so far have been, I'm going to try and occupy the crease. He said afterwards, the big difference is between test matches and the level he's been chopping it up in county cricket, is you don't get so many freebies, right? You don't get a bowler comes on that just lets you have a breather and you can score some runs and get your boundaries away and get your runs up, right? Mm. You don't get that at test level. You do if you're playing against England, though, because Archer's too tired to carry on bowling. Josh Tung's come off and you get Sonny Baker and Harry Brook bowling together or you get Sonny Baker and Jacob Bethell bowling at you. So Henry Nicholls and Daryl Mitchell and Glenn Phillips can go, oh, well, this is nice, isn't it? Mm. Because we've just had a really tough half an hour, but now that guy's so tired, he's not going to be able to bowl till tomorrow afternoon. Yeah. So we'll just score boatloads of runs against these clowns.
Especially,
right? It's test match cricket.
When you know that England aren't playing a frontline spinner and eventually they might even have an overrate problem and the bodies might get tired, you just bat for as long as you possibly can, which is what New Zealand do in the third innings. But Emilio Gay, at least to me, is someone who looked quite resolute. And I'm not saying he will flourish at test level. To me, he's like a better version of Shaan Masood, who is less intent-pilled. because Emilio Gay likes to take his time. And he's kind of anti-Harry Brook as well, because Brook is talented. He's got loads of shots, but Brook can't just stay out there for long enough. I mean, he scores 24 in his first dig, and then a 33-ball 50, chasing 463 runs. And when Brook and Root were out there, you were like, okay, I mean, you can't just write England off yet. But then Harry Brook goes out for 58 or 54, and that's where the slide starts. England eventually are bowled out for 209, so they end up losing this by 253 runs. So I'm just trying to evaluate where he's at currently in his career. And I think Harry Brook has, since his early days where he had a lot of success, in recent times, he's kind of underwhelmed, hasn't he? At least in Test cricket, he has.
So you get the teams on paper, right? The team sheets are handed out. And you go, if England are going to win this Test match, that they were, like I said, they were favourites to win. If England are going to win this Test match, Root and Brook have got to overperform. They've got to score more than what their average is, is what I mean by that. They've got to overperform today because they've got to do, or in this test, because they have to do the heavy lifting. Now, Harry Brook averages 53 in tests. And in the first innings, he played one of the most ridiculous shots I have ever seen against O'Rourke when he bowled a good ball on the top of off stump. And Harry Brook took two steps back and smashed it over backward point, didn't he, for six. Just utterly ludicrous shot. And there are a handful of people in the history of the game that are capable of doing that, right? So Harry Brook is averaging 53 in test matches. He's capable of shots that not many in the world are capable of. And you think, what happens if he faces 200 balls here? You know, what happens if he occupies the crease for a substantial period of time? And I can understand getting LBW to Henry when you've only scored 20 or 25 or however many he had. But in the second innings, England's best chance of a result, bearing in mind, if you're in a three test match series, being 1-0 up with one to play is a million times better than being 1-0.
Yeah.
So England's best shot of doing something in this test match at the Oval in the sunshine, when it always flattens out, is to bat time and try and behave and at least make them earn it. Harry Brook scores a whirlwind 50. And you could say, well, it's not Harry Brook's fault. We lost. He got 58. That's, you know, he's got more than his average. He's absolutely fine.
No, but he doesn't score a lot of tests and a lot of runs in the test, right? Not a lot of tests in the runs.
Why is he smashing fours and sixes all over the place, Bayram, in the
always. That's the thing. Like,
is it like we're trying to chase the 463, the absolute world record by miles, with overs to spare? Why? It's not possible to do that against good bowlers.
Also, I don't know about you, but for me, it really feels like if I'm the captain in the opposition team and I need my bowlers to get Harry Brook out, I'm just going to tell them, nip backers targeting the stumps over and over again with the odd bumper. That's what we're doing versus Brookie.
And it almost looked like when he came to the crease, Harry Brook's going to get a runnable 50 here and that'll be that. It honestly, watching it from the side, most people felt like that's what we were in for there. And it was like the hope was Root would hang around. And at least Root hung around for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
When we got to today, it was just, oh, bollocks, Matt Henry's bowling really well. That's the end of that. We can't be asked. But there used to be, and I was speaking to my dad about this last night, there used to be a time where you watched people trying to save test matches. And it was glorious. Watching, my dad was going on about how Lillian Thompson were facing England once, and two or three of them just blocked for a whole day, and they're tearing their hair out, and it's wonderful to see people with that much resolve. And there's just no iota of a thought that saving the test match might be a good idea. And it's not like, oh, well, with five wickets down at the start of the day, let's just try and get to the pub by lunchtime, or let's get on the golf course by 1 o'clock. Why not see if you can block the whole day out? You have Joe Root there, genuine contender for one of the best of all time, genuine contender for that, at the crease, who's 70-something not out. You've got two guys playing for their test futures, right? Unfortunately, you've got a bad tail in this team.
Yeah.
Why don't you try? Why don't you just go, right, what we're going to do is we're not going to hit anything that isn't going to hit the stumps. I'm going to block everything that is. Let's see how far we get into the day doing that. Because bear in mind, Bayram, when it was doing more, Matthew Fisher stuck around and got 50 off 77 balls. Sonny Baker faced 36 balls, Bayram, in the first inning.
I agree with what you're saying, that there is no mindset that exists that, you know, we're going to go and brave it out and we'll survive. That's not a thing with the Baz bowlers. But day five, that surface, it got a bit wonky. Some of those balls were just dying down. You know, it was going to be hard work.
It was. But in the first, my point here is, in the first innings, Matthew Fisher and Sonny Baker, who were expected to get 10 runs between them, if you're lucky, batted for 3 hours total between the two of them. 3 hours. So they had to bat for 8 hours today with Joe Root at the crease. And they never contemplated doing it. It wasn't that, oh, the pitch was doing so much, they never would have done it anyway. Let's be honest. They never would have done it anyway. But they didn't try and do it. That's the thing that annoys me. If I paid the money to go and watch them today, which I would have done if I lived in London, then you're... What time did it finish?
Very,
half 12?
Very early, man. Yeah. I mean, I had just put the TV on and bam. Like, they were just falling like a house of cards.
And again, shout out to Matt Henry, who got the best figures ever by a New Zealander against England, with 11 poles.
Yeah.
A lot of the assists must go to Blundell for standing up to the stumps. But he looked like a guy, Matt Henry, who has been managed brilliantly by his country and by his board, because he's 34 now. And since his 30th birthday, this guy is averaging under 20 in test match cricket.
Yeah.
And what you've got now is not somebody who is exceptionally fast. He's down a few miles an hour on what he used to be. But Sonny Baker, who is in the side just because he bowls fast, was bowling at 84 miles an hour, Bayram. When Sean Tate came over and bowled for Australia in the 2005 Ashes, when he got his first go over here, he was picked in an extremely good and settled team as the wild card extra guy who could bowl 94 miles an hour. And the rest, by the way, he was clocking 100 sometimes over here. And now we have a guy who's being picked purely because he bowls fast and because he's a nice lad, who's bowling 84.
Yeah.
Who's bowling Matt Henry's pace now. What the hell is that?
So
Matt Henry now is...
Honestly, I've only seen Sonny Baker bowl once in a 100 game where he cranked up the pace. I think that's where everyone got to know of Sonny Baker, and that earned him an England call-up as well. I didn't watch that game that he played for England where he got blasted for like a million runs in an ODI. But I was expecting to see some raw express pace, some serious heat. And I didn't get to see that with Sonny Baker. Like, sure, he clocked 90 miles per hour every now and then, but he's not even quicker than O'Rourke. O'Rourke is the fastest guy in the series, right? After Joff, perhaps, when Joff is not tired after bowling eight consecutive overs.
And he looked lovely as well, O'Rourke. Yeah. Like, he bowled some delivery. That one that got Gay out, you know, Gay's going to have to, has found out that there are deliveries at test match level that you just don't really get in county cricket. I thought Matt Henry has shown, and bearing in mind that Matt Henry was none for after about his first 20 overs in this test match, and he just worked it out, found out how to do it on this surface, and by the end, he was getting a wicket every over this morning.
Yeah.
It was just, he was borderline unplayable, but he bowled three in a row, didn't he? Cox, Archer, Fisher, bang, bang, bang.
Yeah.
And when Cox was threatening to at least give the paying public something, you know, some sort of value for money, Henry just worked him out quite quickly and went, well, he's probably going to take a liberty here. I'm just going to fire in the leg stump Yorker, and that's the end of that. It was a guy that knew exactly what he was doing. And for New Zealand, I'll say it again, who have lost their best player in the middle of this series, have lost their best player to look like a totally different level from England, a totally different level. They look better in every department. Not just the fielding, the experience of the side. To bring in someone of Nicholls' experience, 34-year-old guy that's played 59 test matches, to replace Kane Williamson, and for him then to step up and get the 100, is magnificent for a side to be able to do.
True.
But we've gone all the way around the houses about how England have lost this test match. New Zealand also won this test match by playing really well and playing much better than England.
Absolutely.
We should definitely say that.
Especially
in these circumstances. On the bloody floor.
Yeah, I mean, look, New Zealand got their catches apart from that one that Ruchin dropped, but there are plenty of reasons why New Zealand were the better side in this test match, and we'll get right to them after this short break. You're watching Combox Live with Rob and Bayram, so go nowhere. We'll be back in like a quarter of a minute.
Brian Lara used pot plants to work on his placement. John Wright glued his glove to his bat. Sachin Tendulkar dug up practice pitches. Tatenda Taibu cut the top off his bat. Claire Taylor used a hockey grip. Steve Smith was from tennis. Dean Jones would call phantom runs. And Victor Trumper turned the nets into a war zone to survive. The best batters in the world do whatever they have to make runs. We have told their stories in our new book, The Art of Batting.
Welcome back to Combox Live. You guys are with Bairam and Rob Barron, and we are currently dissecting the Oval Test in which New Zealand smashed England by 253 runs to level the series 1-1. We've spoken a lot about England, and I think we need to talk about some of these New Zealand guys because there were some fantastic performances in this test match, right? I think I have been one of the biggest advocates of Glenn Phillips because he's got all the ingredients. He is absolute box office to watch, but he hasn't really delivered with that sort of consistency at the top level. In the first innings, he scored his maiden test ton. Top scored in that innings with a 133 ball 100, ultimately out two balls later, 100 off 135. Didn't score many runs, I think three in his second dig, but it didn't matter. Because if you were there watching that 100, you were entertained. It was your money's worth, whatever. Even if you were at the ground paying those 175 quid or you had bought a subscription. Glenn Phillips made it worth it. It was counter-attacking brilliance, magnificent counter-attacking 100. When he wasn't smashing the ball to the fence, he was ducking bounces from Jofra and then giving him a thumbs up with his sunglasses on. It was proper cinema. I loved every bit of it. And for him to even survive that bouncer barrage the way he did, that, you know, deserves a lot of plaudits.
Yeah, and what it did is it knackered Jofra for the next day as well. Mm. So his 100, you know, was 100 runs, but also they got loads of runs the following morning. And his dismissal, completely selfless. As soon as he got his 100, he's like, well, you know, a lot of players would have gone, let's try and eke out a few more. And you know, O'Rourke can definitely hang around. And he was like, well, I'm just going to slog. And if I get out, we get 10 minutes at him before the break anyway. And it'd be do you know, I don't mind his dismissal. Like, I think sometimes I'd be shouting at the telly, go, let's get a few more here.
Would you,
but when
though,
you've got 390 against England, you don't need any more.
Yeah, but would you perhaps in the future, if you're New Zealand, elevate Glenn Phillips a couple of batting spots up, maybe at number five as that disruptor? Or is he simply not good enough? Because look, he's averaging like mid-30s in tests, right? This was his maiden test ton. He can do a bit of everything. He can bowl, he can field, he can keep wicket, he can bat. And I personally just love watching him play cricket. But how would you best utilize someone like Glenn Phillips, who, by the way, is like, he's got ADHD. He can't keep himself out of the game. He is a bit of a showman as well because he knows where the cameras are. And I love that about him. But I think that perhaps batting him at seven defeats the purpose of having a disruptor or a half rounder, right? As we've been calling it now.
Yeah, I don't think when he's just bossed it in this series so far that you need to change him now just because he's bossed it now. Like, there are times where you might swap him and Blundell depending on what you want at the time. I don't mind that at all. I think all batting orders should be fluid.
Yeah.
But in test, there's less need for it, for fluidity, because sometimes when it's just like, get as many runs as you can. But there will be occasions, if Phillips is in amazing form, you go, all right, you swap with Blundell and Blundell can bat with the tail later.
Yeah.
And marshal that
also,
you know, if you get out.
You'd have to look at what the stage the innings is in. If it's like you're 40 overs right in and 40 overs later the ball is soft and you've lost your fourth wicket, I mean, just promote him because he can come and whack it to all parts. And I know that, you know, Glenn Phillips is a bit of an underachiever given his talent because A, he's a beast of a human. He's a crazy good athlete. And then he's really, really skilled. Sometimes you watch him play cricket and you wonder, why is he not amongst the best in the world? But he isn't. So I think New Zealand could probably like keep him a bit more flexible in his role because you can get a lot more out of Glenn Phillips. That's just what I've always felt.
Well, they thought, when they first picked him, it was against Australia. He was a number five, if you remember. And he got 50 on debut. And then he got a duck in the second innings, I think. But that was it. That was the end of that experiment. He's never batted higher than seven since then in all his 33 innings it is now. I don't think you need to panic and go, okay, well, he's got some runs, so we'll chuck him out the order. He has scored the most runs for New Zealand two out of the four innings, and he was four runs short in one of the innings at Lord's. He looked really, really in really good order at Lord's, and it's surprising considering he didn't really score any runs in the IPL, did he? So sometimes different formats, your form transfers. He just looked like a guy that is now ready to, at 29, to fulfill some of this potential that we've all seen and we've all been going on about.
Yeah.
But what he has done now, which I don't think he's done that often before in his test career, is he looks like he should definitely be in their starting 11, is what it looks like.
Yeah.
And so that's a really good thing for him, I think, because he's not playing every game in the IPL, for example. He's in and out of the side and they don't know whether it should be Holder or him or whatever, Gujarat. Whereas this lot, he's now a big part of this team, isn't he? Him scoring 100 in the manner that he did having been their best bat in the first test match, it's kind of his coming of age series here, isn't
it? Yeah, I mean,
with the ball, haven't they?
He is so, so good square of the wicket on the offside in particular. Like sometimes he will just nudge the ball and it'll go racing away to the fence for four, right? That's Glenn Phillips in a nutshell for you. I think if he can hone his shots, understand which shots will get him most runs and then counterattack accordingly, he could really have a career. And I mean, I'm still waiting for the day where Glenn Phillips is one of the best players in the world because I've been rating him for quite a while. And Jared often tells me that, Behram, you probably overrate Glenn Phillips a bit. And I'm like, man, when I watch him do things, it forces me to rate him because he's just that good. He passes the eye test and then some. But anyway, he wasn't the most successful batter for New Zealand in this test match. Of course, Daryl Mitchell got dropped twice in both innings, 44 and 68. You can probably take those runs with an ounce of salt. Then you had Rachin finally doing something of note after dropping all those catches. In that third innings, he scored 76 of 99. And he had a 33 in the first innings as well. So he had a decent test as far as runs are concerned. A 161-run partnership with Henry Nichols when New Zealand were reeling at 28 for 2. They ultimately scored 362 in that innings, right? And they set England a target of 463. So that's a noteworthy performance as well by Rachin. But Henry Nichols deserves some proper airtime. Because I mean... Of course, we all will remember this Oval Test because of the Henrys, two different Henrys. But Henry Nichols, for me, is cricket's or one of cricket's greatest journeymen, right? Like, he debuted in Feb 2016. He has played 59 test matches. He averages just under 40, 39.8 something. And he has now smashed 11 hundreds in test cricket. 11 in 59 test matches. 24 in his first dig and 121 in his second. His 100 came off 136 balls. At one point, England were also looking to just bounce him out and he kept getting fours beyond the keeper on the leg side. It was quite an exhibition of, I would say, just resilience because I was asking everyone, like, which teams would Henry Nichols have even made it to had he not been a New Zealander? And he proved his pedigree in this test match. It's probably his most noteworthy 100 in that career that he's had.
So he's kind of done it tough in his whole career, hasn't he? Because he's never been in the side at any of it. I think him playing T20 internationals was a big mistake and that never should have happened. He played 10 of them. But ODIs, he was never, even though he's played 80-something of them, he'd never really felt like he's in their best team. Hmm. But then when he played in the World Cup final on a difficult pitch, he was their best bat that day. He got 55 in the World Cup final. So he's good at, when you need him, at turning up. And how amazing is that for a cricketer to be? And you can't find that in your spreadsheets. Do you know what I mean? It's like, this guy stands up when we really need him. And when Kane Williamson disappears, you know, what England would have done is put somebody who had a haircut that they liked in at number three and hope that he was good at cricket, right? That's how they do things.
Or release and, points. They love release points.
Yeah. And so what they did is, well, they thought, well, what we need is a bit of experience and someone that knows how to score runs at this level. Let's give Nico a go. And he rewarded their faith in him by doing so.
And this guy was the Kane Williamson replacement. That makes it even more phenomenal, right? Like,
exactly.
I mean,
so he replaced Kane Williamson. He got Kane Williamson's runs.
I checked his career and his second and third year in Test cricket, those two were really good. Ever since, he's been a bit on the wane. He does well against lower ranked teams, but not as well against the top ranked teams. But this, I mean, is still a series in England and it counts for something. And you're replacing someone who scored the most runs for New Zealand in this format, right? An out-and-out legend, New Zealand's best batter ever. And for you to come and after failing in the first innings, then score that, you know, wonderful ton in the third, that speaks volumes of Henry Nichols' character and grit and his own, you know, insistence that he belongs at this level, right?
100%. And well done to him for once again taking his chance when he's got it. Hmm. I want to talk about something else, Behram, in this. Something that's happened in the last hour.
Okay.
Is this, you've already mentioned it, to be fair, but it's this thing with England about not caring even slightly about the World Test Championship.
Yeah.
Where the final, unfairly, every single time, is in England. And I'm hearing it won't be at Lord's this time because they can't trust them to put a pitch where it will last more than about an hour.
Yep.
So it'll probably be at the Oval, won't it? The World Test Championship final.
Probably.
So England have once again, right, in the last Test match where they actually turned up and won a game because they put some good players on the park who they subsequently banned for doing nothing, as they've now said. 12 points is loads of points.
Yep.
to lose. 12 points is loads. And they lost this test match by miles, right? They lost it by 250 runs. Mm-hmm. They got murdered in this test match, and they picked some people who shouldn't have been playing at this level at this stage of their career, is what they did. And they've got fined half their match fee, right? And they won't care about that. I mean, I'd imagine Baker will, because if he plays 50 tests, then they've messed it up. So they fined half their match fee. 12 World Test Championship points. Is that as many points as they got for winning the game?
Yes, that's what I told you. So they've basically gone zero in the series. They've pulled off of Pakistan. Because Pakistan had...
It cost £175 to go and watch them.
Yeah, I mean, Pakistan had 8 points prior to their tour to Bangladesh. And they came back in the negative, I believe. Like, because they had lost points due to overrate, and then they didn't win a test match either. So England are maybe not as bad, but yes, everything that they earned from that test match victory at Lord's has just been thrown away at the Oval. Not only did they lose this test, they've effectively lost all the points for the first one. Only England can manage that, at home at least.
Okay, I am very angry about that, because England play the most tests, right? So the table doesn't make any sense ever, because you're allowed to play loads and loads of tests. So it's not the first lot of points they've been deducted so far in this cycle. They did against India last year, but it was only a couple.
Yeah.
But to lose 12, when you're losing the match with two and a half sessions to spare anyway, and you're going through your bowling innings, bowling Bethel for loads of it, bear in mind, you know, New Zealand didn't bother bowling spin, did they?
No.
They're like, Bethel didn't bowl the odd over. He bowled 21 overs in the match.
Yeah.
So they had plenty of time to get the overs done. But the fact that they couldn't care less, even with Joe Root captaining, right? Mm. You'd think, well, at least I'll just make sure we don't do anything too silly. To throw away an entire test match victory on top of losing the test match in terms of points, once again, they've stopped sticking two fingers up to their fans. They're now just sticking the middle finger up to their fans constantly.
Look,
going, we're going to keep picking shit teams. We're going to keep charging you all this money. It's £9.30 a pint, but we definitely won't be in the World Test Championship final. So make the most of it while you can.
The issue is not with them. The issue is with you, because you expect too much. They don't think about the World Test Championship cycle. They're preparing for the next Ashes. That's how English cricket functions, right? Like, they don't even acknowledge...
They didn't prepare for the last Ashes.
They don't even acknowledge the test mace, or if it's a thing, or if that final is important, because they are here to entertain, right? Like, anyway, enough on England. Just on a closing note, New Zealand's bowling, you mentioned how they went with a four-pronged pace attack once again. No spinners. This time, Matt Henry was fit, though. And just before we get to him, the second best performance with the ball for New Zealand in this test match was Kyle Jameson. 1 for 78 in 20 overs, and then 3 for 61 in 19 overs. So he goes for quite a few runs. My math isn't that good, but I would say 139 runs, right? And he's taken 4 wickets in 39 overs. That's the second best bowler for New Zealand. That goes on to show you just how good Matt Henry was. Of course, pulled up a bit in the first test, couldn't bowl as much, wasn't as effective. In the second test at the Oval, 5 for 80 in 24 overs, and then 6 for 29 in 18.1 overs. Player of the match, deservedly so. If you tally that up, that is 11 for 109. Which are phenomenal figures, that too in like 42.1 overs. And this was the first time ever that Matt Henry took a 10 for in his test career. It was also the first time there was a 10-wicket haul by any bowler at the Oval since Warney back in 2005. And then if you go back to pace bowlers, you'd have to go all the way back to 1994. Devon Malcolm, that's the last 10 for by a seam bowler at the Oval. So a lot of records broken by Matt Henry over here. We actually, at goodarea.com/combox, called him or judged him as the most improved cricketer in Test cricket. I think since the start of 2024, he's averaging in the teens or something with the ball. He is someone who I had the pleasure of speaking to some years back, Rob. I did a podcast with Matt Henry, and I spoke to him about his injury, because back in the day, he was Bond-esque, the action, the pace, and then he fucked his back up, right? And then he has like a metal rod behind his back. So here's a story for everyone not to give up, right? Like, because clearly this guy's entire career was shattered, and then he's back again leading New Zealand's attack. And then second thing that he told me is that when he went to play county cricket in England prior to the 2019 World Cup, ODI World Cup. He was playing for Kent. He learned the wobble ball. That's where he picks that up. If you look at his wickets, all 11 of them, or the vast majority of the 11 wickets that he took, he's just pitching it in the same area over and over again, jagging it back towards the stumps and targeting the stumps. And inevitably, he will either get you bowled or LBW or you'll chop on. It was just that simple. He stuck to his basics. And it also tells you, it goes back to the same point, that England are obsessed with picking the faster guys. And Matt Henry is not even that guy. Tom Blundell is standing up to the stumps to him. And he has completely wrecked England over here.
Yeah, he was brilliant. And like I said, he just looks like a guy that knows his craft and what he has to do. And as I said earlier, he's averaging under 20 since his 30th birthday. So he's one of the very best in the world in the last few years. And 4 years, that is. He's 4 years he's averaging under 20. That's a very big sample in Test match cricket. So, yeah. And apparently he's a lovely man, isn't he?
Yes, he is so good.
He certainly comes across as one.
Honestly, yeah. Every single time I have ever interacted with a New Zealand cricketer, and there have been a few times now, luckily enough for me, I'm even mates with Henry Nicholls' brother, Willie Nicholls. But anyway, they have so much time for you. If there is a technical difficulty, they will not just up and leave. Some of the nicest people across the world, I think they live in New Zealand and they've got that nice guy tag. And yeah, I suppose Henners is no different. Without the mustache, he just looks like someone who couldn't harm a fly.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to face him though, would you?
Nope.
And but when New Zealand turn up, and the reason they lost the first test, there were two reasons. One is they couldn't catch, and two is Henry had back spasms. Bearing in mind he was numb for in this Test match, none for 40 something off 10 overs, basically. And then he clicked into gear. His first wicket was root, wasn't it? When he banged him in front.
Yeah. Those were two quick wickets, right? Root and Brooke.
So he went bang bang and he was away. So and how good is that? So it's not like he just got the tail out both times, or he got both the guns out in both innings. You know, Brooke and Root both times, and he got three of those four were LBW with the keeper up. So they had a plan and it worked brilliantly. And again, England will never, you know, do anything that's particularly smart, but there was an obvious plan and they couldn't cope with it. And New Zealand just went, well, we've got a really good bowler here. He's going to bowl at the stumps. The keeper's going to stand up and that's the end of them. Hmm. And that's kind of all she wrote. They thoroughly deserved their victory. What we do have is a third test. It's a shame that there aren't more, but a third test decider.
Where is it?
Where it's very well set up. Trent Bridge, aren't we?
Oh,
so
yes.
It's
Oh, my God. It's going to be an out-and-out flatty, isn't it? Runs on, runs on, runs.
It feels right. It depends what the weather does, I think. It depends how, because we're meant to get another heat wave here in England. It's bloody boiling here today, fortunately. Hmm. But if we get another heat wave, then Trent Bridge, which is one of the roadiest roads in England, in the world when it wants to be, it depends whether it can crack up a bit and then take turn, and then we might see bash play again. But it feels like, even though I'm just looking at the odds now and it isn't quite, it feels like a 50-50 game, the last one. And that's great for everybody, right? Like the watching public, England will go off favourites because they won't pick that shambles of a team again, and they'll probably just go back to the first test team again.
Well,
if they got any sense.
I don't know where Ollie Robinson's fitness is at, but if he's back to test match fitness, then he will play for sure. Gus and Stokesy will be ushered in ASAP, and we'll all forget that, you know, the rugby lads incident ever happened. It's in the past now. And I still feel that if they have a road at Trent Bridge, I don't think that favours England. Because England do not have the bowling attack to be incisive. New Zealand might still find a way because they've got good diversity in that attack, right? Jameson and O'Rourke are those two guys who can probably enforce a wicket or two. Henry will just pitch it in the same little channel all over, you know, or throughout the day. And then you've got Nathan Smith who adds a bit of swing, right? Into the mix, he can also wobble the ball. And all of these guys, or most of these guys, like I know that Jameson, of course, he scored 41. And then we've seen Nathan Smith score some runs as well. Those two can bat. So I'm not sure if a flat deck suits England more as compared to New Zealand at Trent Bridge.
I don't know. I think England will probably want a flat deck. And Duckett was showing some signs of being able to play cricket at the top of the order again before...
Yep.
He got barbecued by somebody who he tried to barbecue half an hour before.
Yeah.
Again, England are stupid, and Duckett looks like a really dumb cricketer at the moment, which is a shame. It's sad to see, since he was wandering around not knowing where he was in Australia, he's taken that exact form to wandering around the crease not knowing where he is in Test matches.
That was not a run.
Certainly in the field.
That run was not one.
Of course not. Yeah. Of course not. But in the field, he's wandering around not knowing where he is either, and he's getting the ball hit straight to him and he's dropping it. And there was a perfect thing that happened yesterday. Was two balls went to Duckett at short cover, I think, or short mid-wicket maybe. And one of them, he had a really good chance of a run out, and he ran in, picked the ball up and missed the stumps, and it would have been a run out. And then he had another one 10 minutes later where he ran in, nailed the stumps down, and the batsman was in by 2 feet. Mm. And that's England in the field, right? They do good stuff when it doesn't bloody matter, and they do crap stuff when it does.
Yeah.
And they need to start ironing this stuff out. And I reckon if you asked England what do they want in the next Test match, they probably do want a road bay run because they've had all their success on roads and belting.
Yeah.
And they probably want a chase. And they probably want loads of people there with a series on the line. And they're like, now it matters. Let's see what we can do. And maybe, you know, Stokes having a week off and playing for Durham and belting county bowlers all over the place will definitely do his form some good. Because if he'd have played in this one with the form that he's been stinking out the Test arena with and not done anything again, the question marks get on. But now it's like Stokes, his stock, he's wonderfully well managed. His stock has risen loads this week because the captain can't captain. They can't win without him. Forgetting that he's been crap for ages, he scored 95 on BBC this week. You could either listen to or watch the Test match. Sorry, you could listen to the Test match or Ben Stokes playing at Durham. Was on the other channel.
Yeah, I mean, look.
And it's like, quick fire 95. That's how much his PR machine gets to work.
Yeah, if you're scoring a quick fire 95, clearly you can still bat, even if the level of bowling is not as strong. But I mean, just to end the show, we both know that New Zealand will probably go unchanged over here, right? But England have to make changes. Jamie Smith is going to come back, so bye-bye James Roo, right? That's one change. Then you'd expect both of Atkinson and Stokes to come back into the side. So presumably, And we're just flat out assuming over here that Ollie Robinson isn't fit for the third Test match. Who are you? Oh, he is? Then all three of those come back. And it's the exact same team that played in the first Test, essentially.
I think so.
Okay.
Unless they want to play... you think they play Bashir or not?
I think they should put Jofra on ice.
So you have Jofra, then, who plays one Test in a three-Test series?
Yeah. He should ideally be playing tests number 1 and 3 or 1, 3, 5, but they've done it differently. And I don't think Jofra Archer's body can handle back-to-back test matches, which, mind you, does not have, like, both those test matches do not have a major break in between.
What his body can't handle now, Bayram, is bowling 8 overs off the reel of bouncers in the heat when he's knackered and he hasn't played for 6 months. Mm. That's what his body can't handle.
Yeah.
But they keep making him do loads of stuff his body can't handle. So I guess because England have spectacularly underperformed in this one, not with the 11 that they had, just the whole collective, right? The management, the selectors, the people that actually ended up playing. I don't think Sonny Baker underperformed at all in this test match. I thought he tried hard. His run-up clearly needs loads of work because he is bowling from 23 yards. I don't know if you noticed. He's bowling from 23 yards. If he starts bowling from 22... 85 miles an hour is a lot quicker when you're bowling from 22 yards. If you run up so chaotic that you're bowling from the bloody bus stop every time.
Why is it that his foot is so significantly behind the popping crease? Like, is that intentional? Does he not want to risk no balls? Because he's losing a yard of pace.
Right. So I heard that he modelled his run-up on Brett Lee. And Brett Lee said he did his run-up. Now, you know, maybe there are better test bowlers you could model yourself on. Anyway, he said, Sonny Baker, that Brett Lee said, what you do to mark your run-up is you run in with your eyes shut and you do what feels right. That's how you get your rhythm. So you run in with your eyes shut, you plant your foot, you release the ball. That's where it is. Job's a good one. But if you do that, and his run-up is running a silly little Fred Flintstone steps and then barge your way through to scrum and then do your run up. If his one starts at the sight screen and his foot plants 1 yard before the crease, what the hell are you doing? Sort it out. And England don't know this about Sonny Baker because all they do know is he bowls fast, allegedly. Like you say, you've seen it in 100 match where the speed gun was probably adding 20 miles an hour because the 100 puts graphics up on the screen that aren't true. It's selling a product that doesn't exist, I'm afraid. So let's say Sonny Baker bowls fast and he's got some character. He showed character with the bat. I'll give him that. I enjoyed his batting. He was dead batting when England were eking out more runs. That's great. But he shouldn't have been playing Test match cricket. So because they got it so spectacularly wrong in this one, including everything they said, the management, everything they publicly said about, well, actually, what we're going to decide now is that these terribly naughty boys that we were going to fire from their jobs didn't do anything wrong at all because we didn't tell them that what they were doing was wrong, right? So that's fine. So now everybody has a clear pass to come back. The guy that had a week off because his wife had a baby, he didn't have a baby himself, by the way, his wife did. The guy's had a week off of that, he comes back, great. The guy who has been really badly managed for ages, he's back because he's now fit again to play, so he's back. And the two naughty boys, including the captain. So the guy that definitely got stripped of the captaincy 1 week ago now has the captaincy back because they realise the only other guy who is able to captain can't captain. So, so now we end up with Stokes the captain, Ollie Robinson's a legend, he's back, and Gus Atkinson, not a naughty boy after all. He didn't know that the curfew that everybody publicised and some of the players have got tattooed on their faces. There was a bit of a clue for the two of them that there was a curfew because everybody else that went to the pub and went home when the pub closed.
Yeah.
And these two, they said, we're going back to the hotel, lads, because it's nearly midnight and that's what time we have to be home. Mm. And Stokes went, yes, but me, the man who's given up drinking publicly, who is now 10 pints and 4 Jaeger bombs in, says, yes, but there's a club up the road and I hear the rugby boys are going. Mm. And Gus said, well, I'll come. And they didn't know that there was anything wrong with that. So those boys are fine. Mm. Everything's forgiven. See you next time. It's going to be awesome.
Pick your attack because the batting is pretty straightforward once Jamie Smith comes back, right? And Stokesy will replace Jordan Cox. But what is the bowling attack that England should go with? And mind you, like they do get a fourth bowler in Ben Stokes. So you could potentially play Bash, right?
Yeah, I think it's Atkinson, Robinson, Tong, Stokes, Archer.
Hmm.
If you want to go spin, you can. I honestly think the call about the spin, I can't make now. I would want to see what the pitch is and what the pitch is likely to be.
Well,
he either plays or he doesn't.
You don't want to be minus 12 points on over it, do you?
Well, they obviously don't care about that. So my question to them would be, what do they care about?
Hmm.
Right? Because they don't care about the Ashes because they said everything last year. They allowed loads and loads of bad performances on the proviso that the Ashes would be brilliant and well-prepared. So they got that utterly and completely wrong and they threw test matches in the bin even when they were playing it, right? I can't bear to go through that again. So they definitely don't care about the Ashes. They didn't care about the last World Test Championship or any of the tests within it. Now we get to this whole new era. I wish they could just behave themselves. I wish I could stop talking about... McCullum said today, I just wish I could stop talking about this stuff that you're asking me. He's never really said anything. But basically, I don't want you to ask me questions. All I want to talk about is the cricket and making us better at cricket. Well, at least you could have, the very least they could have done from this test match is lose it because they picked a shit team, right? They picked a bad 11 and they got stuffed. And that can happen in sport. The management should be saying, sorry, we got the team wrong there. Some of that, the fact that two of the best ones from the last time couldn't play was our fault. But they didn't lose that test match. They lost that test match twice in terms of the table. They lost two test matches then because they couldn't be bothered to bowl quick enough. So whose fault is that? No one will ever be made accountable for that, Bayram. They will probably never speak about it. Why not? Who is accountable for that? Is that the captain? In which case, are they going to hang Joe Root out to dry? Don't think so. That wouldn't be a good idea, would it? Is it the management's fault? Everything is the management's fault. They're ultimately responsible for all of it. And nobody cares because if... nobody will police the police, right? They can do whatever the hell they want. So these people now have jobs which are untenable and they must not carry on in them. If they do, you will love it, Bayram, because you will get an angry version of me every single time we talk about this utter idiocy of a collective that call themselves the England cricket team.
All right, then. Got everything out of your system, Rob?
No.
Anyway, I think that's a perfect time to end this podcast. Was a fun one. I'm really curious to see in what direction England go from here. And that last test match has a lot of stakes now because New Zealand will want to win a test series in England and England now want to reverse the tide once again. So we'll see you for another review once that test match ends. A big thanks to Rob Barron for sparing an hour and 20 minutes. And a big thank you to all of you guys who were there with us in the chat. So don't forget to like, share and subscribe. And then follow Combox everywhere as well. We'll be coming out with daily content for you guys anyway. So just keep an eye out. Until then, you guys have a good one. Enjoy yourselves and goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast on the Combox Network. There is an ad-free version of this you can find by supporting us on Patreon at Good Areas Podcast. You can also access our Discord channel there. Please like, subscribe, and rate this show. Every one of these helps us. If there was a guest on a show, you can find their links in the show notes. Huge thanks to Rakshit, Ishit, and everyone else who helps us get our content out there. If you want to know more about us, head to combox.tv.
If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.